You're listening to County Conversations, a podcast brought to you by the New York State Association of Counties. This episode features a conversation between NYSEC's Legislative Director Ryan Gregoire and Cornell University Forest Entomologist Mark Whitmore. They will discuss the impact of hemlock woolly adelgids in forests of New York State, the important role and natural value that hemlock trees have, and how local leaders can support preservation efforts.
Okay, thank you everyone for joining us and tuning in to today's NYSEC County Conversation podcast. My name is Ryan Gregoire, and I am the Legislative Director for your New York State Association of Counties. Today, I have the pleasure of being joined by Mark Whitmore, the Principal Investigator and Founder of the New York State Hemlock Initiative and a Forest Entomologist with Cornell University. Mark has been studying insects that feed on trees for over 30 years, the last 15 of which he has focused on invasive, non-native species that are changing the face of North America's forested landscape. He started his career in forest entomology, studying spruce beetles in Alaska, moved to Berkeley to focus on biological control of forest pests, and has been at Cornell since 1989. Mark currently works with professional land managers, state and federal agencies, local government officials, and concerned citizens to help them understand the issues surrounding and strategies for minimizing the impact of non-native invasive insects such as the emerald ash borer and the hemlock woolly adelgid. Mark's current research focuses on biological control of the hemlock woolly adelgid, otherwise known as the HWA. Today's podcast focuses on Mark's in-depth knowledge and research of the HWA, and most recently, Mark had joined county leaders to discuss this invasive species and the disastrous effects it could have on our county forests, parks, and our state parks, including the Adirondacks, the Catskills, and the forests within Western New York. Mark, thanks again for joining us. It's truly a pleasure to have you with us again.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very honored to have you ask me to join you.
Great. Mark, so for our listeners who weren't able to join your presentation last week, can you briefly describe this insect and why it's so important to preserve our hemlock trees and I guess where the HWA currently exists and has the potential to infiltrate?
Sure, yeah. So let me start with the hemlocks. I think that the most important thing to me is that everyone realize the resource, the value of the resource. I talk about living trees as a resource, but they're an amazing natural resource, I think, to New Yorkers. And I just think it's so important for people to get out there and to learn what a hemlock looks like to begin with, and then start to look around and realize what actually might be threatened. Hemlocks, it's interesting, occupy a very important role in New York's forests. It's the third most common tree in New York State, right behind the red maple and sugar maples. And it forms different kinds of forests. In the Adirondacks, we'll get pure stands of hemlock or near pure stands of hemlock over vast areas, and the Catskills as well. And then when you get into more of the Finger Lakes, they'll show up in areas like the gorges and gullies that weren't timbered heavily and representing sort of islands and such. I don't look at any one situation as being more important than the others. I, of course, look to the old growth forests that I've found in the state parks and in the Adirondacks. And I just, there's something about those trees that just tugs at my heartstrings. They're ancient, and they create an environment that's unique amongst the trees. Indeed, we ecologically refer to them as a foundation species. Basically, they provide the foundation of the habitat upon which many other species depend on for existence. Imagine the winter time when you have less snow under the hemlock forest, and that helps the mammals survive the hard winter. And then again, you have the dense cover in springtime, retarding the melting of the ice and the snow under the hemlock stands, which maintains cooler water in the streams that help the brook trout, the native brook trout, breed. You know, there's many, many different things that you can say about it, but I just keep going back to my own sentimental feelings towards the tree. They remind me of sort of like the Labrador puppy dog of the tree world. So there's something about them that just you just want to, at least I want to just be around them. And so that's been sort of one of the drivers in my passion for looking at the hemlock woolly adelgid, which has been an interesting insect to work on. You know, basically, I've been studying adelgids for 40 years now, and off and on, and starting in the West Coast with the balsam woolly adelgid, which also happens to be in the Adirondacks. But the hemlock woolly adelgid basically came to the eastern United States probably in the early 1900s in the Richmond, Virginia area on nursery stock during the craze to create Japanese themed gardens in arboretas. And so the biotype that we have in eastern North America comes from southern Japan, and work has shown that it's the same biotype that spread all the way now from northern Georgia all the way to Nova Scotia, Maine, through New England, and into New York, throughout New York, starting in New York in the mid-1980s, and now found in Michigan and Ontario. So it's continuing to spread throughout the range of hemlock. And so it was first really recognized as a pest in the mid-50s in the Richmond, Virginia area. Before then, nobody really recognized it. And then in the 70s, it really became apparent as it started killing vast swaths of hemlocks in the Blue Ridge Mountains, and has since gone all the way down through the Great Smoky Mountain National Park. That was a tragedy. I've been down there, and if anybody wants to see a sobering sight, just go to Great Smoky Mountain National Park and see all the dead trees staying around down there. It moved through the park in about 10 years. But up here in the north, I think we have the luxury of a little bit more time. They move more slowly due to the cold weather that we have. That mortality event has sort of kept them from moving rapidly. But my research has shown recently that, you know, even though we have these polar vortex winters, they're not all polar vortex winters where we got mortality of over 90%. Indeed, the past two winters have been quite light, and I'm a skier, so I've been very disappointed. The mild winters have allowed them to move rapidly. The populations build right back up, and even though you think that they're gone or they're severely impacted by the cold, they just come right back up. And there's a couple of reasons for this. So first of all, one of the reason that hemlock woolly adelgid is so important is that basically it's a small insect, about a millimeter in diameter. It looks much like a little beach ball with mouth parts that go into the tree, to the twig tissue of the trees. This insect has a very interesting life cycle in that it spends most of its time growing in the wintertime and spring. And during the summertime, it's just a little tiny black dot that's resting on the twigs. And if you're trying to avoid predation, that's a really great strategy because you're just this inedible little speck in the summertime when all the predators are out. And so in the wintertime when they're growing and in the springtime, the predators that we've found elsewhere have been specialists at this very time period, and we've been fortunate to find them. So the other aspect of this insect is that it goes through two generations a year, and perhaps most importantly, they're all females. There's no sexual reproduction. So what this translates to basically is that all you need is one individual to settle on a hemlock tree, and you have a whole population developing because the reproductive potential can be high, and you know, anywhere from 10,000 or more individuals from one successful establishment. And so that allows the rapid population growth and has been the reason for its, I hate to say success, but you know, the success of the insect and the demise at the same time of the hemlocks all throughout the East Coast.
That is some pretty powerful news that you're sharing. Not news, but some pretty powerful statistics that you're sharing with us, Mark. And you know, you just mentioned how the hemlock trees pull at your heartstrings, and I think I'll say that message really resonated with county leaders previously, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on today's podcast to talk about VHWA and your research efforts. And I think particularly as we see ourselves and read the news of what's happening in the western United States with really quite severe wildfires and how that's impacting the ecology and the environment of those communities, it reminds us how important our forests are for not only our own safety and our own security, as you mentioned, some of the benefits that hemlocks provide, but also for the recreation and really beautiful natural parks that we have in our state that folks have just come to really cherish here. So, again, for our listeners, we're talking with Mark Whitmore, a forest entomologist and an expert on hemlocks and this new invasive species to New York State. Well, it's been around for a little while. You know, Mark's research is showing us that VHWA is beginning to expand. So, Mark, let's talk about kind of where the footprint is right now in New York. Can you give our listeners a sense of where the HWA is currently and what you're worried about?
Yeah, sure, Ryan. Thank you. I when you were talking just recently, you were just bringing up a thought that I have, you know, all throughout my career working with forest insects, killing trees. It's, you know, I hate to use a cliche, but it's really true that, you know, I can see it coming because I know what to look for. I know where the bugs are, and I can perceive their presence. But most people don't really do that. Hemlocks is a prime example where it really, the trees are green up until the time when they're probably pretty much dead. And that's because the adelgid doesn't really kill the needles directly. What it does is it kills the buds and keeps the trees from putting new needles on. So it retains the old needles, but then when the old needles finally die, which is what all needles do, all of a sudden the tree is gone. The cliche is that oftentimes, you know, it's like you just don't know what you got till it's gone. And boy, that really is playing out with the hemlock and the hemlock woolly adelgid. So basically the history in New York State is that the earliest detections were in the mid-80s in the Hudson Valley. And it moved, you know, basically through the Hudson Valley as well as in Connecticut, Massachusetts. I think the warmer areas it moved more rapidly and it got up into the Catskills. And the Catskills, it's been moving its way through the Catskills now, and it's up the Rondout and the Neversink, where there's beginning to be a tremendous amount of mortality, as well as tipping over into the Beaverkill area around the Pipacton Reservoir. But it also has gotten into the Finger Lakes and into, all up and down the Finger Lakes, into, some of the greatest parks like Treeman Park, Tagannock, as well as Letchworth. And, it was a couple of years ago first detected in Allegheny Park. It spreads spottily throughout the West. It's gradually moving up the Hudson River Valley. It's spotted into areas near Saratoga, Ballston Spa area, and we got an infestation near Lake George 3 years ago, but that was only three trees. And we moved quickly. I'm very impressed with the DEC and their recognition of the threat to the resource and the fact that when it gets into the Adirondacks where there's hemlocks everywhere, it's a big deal. And indeed, my recent work in the Lake George area with the recent detection by one camper, that one camper created, it was just an amazing scene. I don't know how many people are aware that there's this program out there that has been supported by DEC for years. It's called IMAP Invasives, and it's a really great, easy-to-use program. You download it onto your smartphone. I don't know. I don't feel so smart when I have that thing in my hands, but whatever. But anyway, I can even use it. And it's a great program, and, if you find an invasive species, you've been educated, whatever, you can report it on that platform, and immediately it goes to people at DEC that look at it. They're aware of, the expertise in that area, and they can determine, how important it is. Well, we got one report from the camper on Lake George at the end of July, and boy, I tell you, the flags went up the pole real fast, and we were all over it. And since then, I've been up there every week, basically looking at where the population is, how big the problem is, and looking at how we can address it effectively. And I am I got to say, at this point in time, I am just amazed at the amount of hemlock around the Lake George area. Having gone around almost the whole lake now in a boat looking with binoculars at the trees, there's hemlocks everywhere. It is, without doubt, in my mind, the most common tree along the shores of Lake George. And if anybody's been to Lake George, you realize the greenness and the beauty of it. It would be, I just can't imagine it without hemlocks. So the interesting thing about the Lake George infestation is that it sort of mimics what I've seen in the Finger Lakes, where when HWA first comes into an area, it will invariably alight, I think, near water. And my best guess is that it's probably birds that bring it in. They like to use the water. And then, remember, all it takes is one bug, and the whole thing goes crazy. And so that's basically what we found in the Lake George area, where we found concentrations, just a few spots along about a mile and a half area, that we found a fair number of bugs on a few trees, but one spot in particular has more than a handful of trees that actually have pretty heavy infestation, and one tree that's very close to death. So, but these are very limited in scope, and we've done great surveys of the area, being very careful and delimiting them, and so I think that we have a good handle on the scope of the infestation at this point. And I just can't say more strongly that now is the time to act. If we don't, if it gets loose into the hemlock forest and the surrounding area, it'll be unstoppable, much like perhaps happened in the Great Smoky Mountain National Park. So this one camper has afforded us an opportunity to really make a great effort to save this resource. And just that one report, in my mind, was enough to justify that whole program since its inception. So I'm really, really grateful. And it also shows the importance of education and engaging citizen scientists in our efforts to work on invasive species.
We'll be right back to the discussion after this brief message. NYSAC would like to thank one of our fall seminar featured sponsors. WSP develops creative, comprehensive, and sustainable engineering solutions for a future in which society can thrive. They plan, design, manage, and engineer long-lasting and impactful solutions to uniquely complex problems. Through their Future Ready program, they help communities develop and implement clear solutions that prepare them for tomorrow and the future.
Let's dive into this a little bit and unpack some of what you just talked about. Let me start with the pressing question that I think is on everyone's minds, which is, okay, so you've mapped where this infestation is across New York State in the Catskill Mountains and the Finger Lakes regions and our state parks out west, and then now, of course, with this new infestation in Lake George. I recognize that there's only one tree that's close to death in the Lake George region, and it sounds like they're on the coast or on the shores on the Washington County side of the lake. But can you talk to us now about how do we actually get rid of this insect? What are the methods that we can employ to protect our state?
Well, of course, that's a great question because that's about all I think about. And we're very fortunate at this point in time to have at our disposal the use of some insecticides that are very effective, and they are not costly. And I also say they're environmentally sound, very environmentally safe. I'll state at this point in time directly, I got into entomology and forest entomology. I'm concerned about the amount of pesticide use that was being perpetrated in the good old days, like, you know, the bombers with for spruce budworm and such. And I disdain their use unless absolutely necessary. And that's why I study biological control, the use of the predators, which is the long-term answer in my mind. Once we get the biological controls in place, hopefully we will not need to use pesticides in the future. But right now, we're limited. We just have not had enough time to really get the biological controls worked out and implemented. And so to save the forests, especially right now in Lake George, we've been using these insecticides. They're systemic insecticides, which means they're put directly into the tree, and they're transported throughout the tree into the tissues that are then fed upon by the insects. And so these insecticides are easily applied to the bark of the tree rapidly, and they move up into the tree. And so what we're hoping right now is that we'll get them in place in October, so that will kill the developing insects so they won't reproduce in the springtime. We've been using these insecticides all throughout the state, especially at some of the most, you know, the iconic parks that we have, like Letchworth and Allegheny, and especially, you know, that Minnewaska and Treeman and Tuganic, just to name a few. And these have been effective at saving the hemlocks, this great scenic resource in these places. Now, the thing is, it's not going to be a one treatment thing. This is going to be something that we're going to need to work on year in and year out. Those are tiny bugs. They spread not rapidly, but they do spread. And so we're just going to have to be up there, I think, spending a lot of time surveying to be certain that we get all of the trees treated that we need to, and hopefully forestall the widespread, forestall the spread more widely of HWA in the region. I think in other areas like the Finger Lakes and such, we really have to look at our resources and prioritize them because I consider it pretty much widespread in the Finger Lakes, not especially in Western New York as much, but the Finger Lakes and the Catskills, Southern Catskills especially, it's widespread. And so we have to look and try and figure out where are the hemlocks that we really value. Let's keep them alive so that we have them and we have their seed for the future when we finally do get the biological controls in place.
That's great. Thank you, Mark, for that. So I think the next question from your prior remarks that everyone's thinking about is, okay, if I'm a county official, and maybe we have a county park here, maybe the county park has some hemlocks, but even if that's not the case, as a local leader in my community, what can I be doing to support your preservation efforts? Who should I be talking to? What should I be doing as a county leader to ensure that I'm a helpful partner in this endeavor?
Well, that's a really good question. And I've had conversations with county leaders, state leaders for a while now. And I think the most important thing in my mind is to help local conservation organizations identify priority areas, because really I think it's not an economic issue as much as it is maintaining the scenic beauty and the value for recreation and recreational areas that are provided by the hemlocks, and then help with their preservation. I think that recognizing that there is a problem and that if we don't address it, we will lose the trees. Work with organizations and helping them as best they can to preserve this resource. It's a community resource. I'm thinking right now, some of the preserved lands, not only the parks, but also lands preserved in land trust, nature preserves, and other private conservation efforts. They oftentimes don't have the wherewithal to do this. And so I think working with these organizations and shaking hands with the state on this as well. There are, I think, some sources available, federal sources, that look to, they're working with governmental lands, but I think that there's also the opportunity when the resource is of great value to work with private landowners. And we're still looking at some of these instances, for instance, where trout streams are threatened.
Terrific. Thank you for that, Mark. And for our listeners, we're speaking with Mark Whitmore, the founder and really a statewide expert on our hemlock trees. And Mark is the founder of the New York State Hemlock Initiative, and he's a leader in the hemlock woolly adelgid, or HWA, which is an invasive species that is infiltrating our forests across the state. Mark, I just have a couple more questions for you. So you've talked about the efforts that the state is doing and your organization is doing and other conservation areas are doing to save our trees and kind of prevent the spread of the HWA species. And you just touched upon how county leaders can participate in this initiative too. I think you've hit a critical point in the discussion of the importance of our hemlock preservation across the state. And it really goes back to why people come to New York State. I mean, it's September now, almost October. We're in a beautiful time of year. You mentioned our red maples and our silver maples are the largest tree species, and then the hemlocks are right behind them. But if you think about it, when you travel through the Adirondacks or the Catskills or across the Finger Lakes regions, you see these iconic pictures, and what comes to mind is this blend between the beautiful scenery of the hemlocks mixed with the vibrant colors from these maple trees. And then you also have the birch trees, mostly up in the Adirondacks. And this combination really gives New York State a sense of identity that others may not be able to relate to. You spoke earlier about the Smoky National Park and how the HWA really decimated their forest in the South. So I think on behalf of the counties across the state, we're grateful to have had you come and present, and we're so pleased that you've been able to join us for this podcast to talk a little bit more about this issue that's spreading across our state. Before we conclude today's podcast, did you have anything else you wanted to share with county officials? Is there something like a poster, or is there informational material that counties should be sharing on their website or posting at maybe their county office buildings or public libraries?
Yes, there are. We've been working on that for a while now, and I'm actually quite proud of our website at the address is nyshemlockinitiative.info. And there's tons of stuff on there. Plus, DEC has been producing a lot of material, and it's available through the Lands and Forests Division in DEC, or probably you just go to any DEC office throughout the state, one of the regional offices, and they'll be able to get you in touch with sources of information. And it makes a difference that the camper that reported it at Lake George, they wouldn't have known what it was if it hadn't been for these sources of information. And I also wanted to add, I forgot one thing, and it's also important. I'm going to take this moment to, you know, put my hat back on and say, you know, one of the things facing counties right now is huge. It's not just the hemlock. And it's the fact that when trees die, they fall down. And when they fall down, they cause problems. And so maintaining infrastructure is huge. For hemlocks, it's more of a native or a natural infrastructure of the parks and such. And if you spoke, I spoke with the forester at the Great Smoky Mountain National Park, and he said, if I had known then what I know now about hemlock woolly adelgid, I would have treated as many trees as possible to keep them alive. Because right now he's dealing with having to close very popular roads and campgrounds because of the dead trees around. They fall down, they are a public hazard, and he just does not have the wherewithal to deal with that in an expedient manner. So he's doing it gradually. This is important not only to, you know, is also important, I think, in a county context where there's a lot of hemlock trees out there, but they're not always in really important infrastructure areas. On the other hand, we have ash trees, and the emerald ash borer is killing the ash trees, and ash trees are all about being around public infrastructure because they readily seed into disturbed soils. And that's the definition of what we have for around public infrastructure. You look at the power lines. I look at my power lines. My driveway is a quarter mile long. I have 15 ash trees that are right next to it. And I'm an expert at taking down trees because I'm not going to get anywhere near those trees. And I, quite frankly, don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to wait for the trees to fall on the lines. Or then you look at, you know, schools, playgrounds where ash trees are all around, or parks. Ash trees are a huge threat, and if there's anything I can leave county executives, county personnel with at this point in time, just pay attention to the ash trees right now in New York State, because the emerald ash borer is going to come through, and it's going to create problems. And the more aware we are, the more planning ahead of it, the better off we'll be.
Great. Well, thank you, Mark, for this really in-depth podcast session with NYSAC this afternoon. I can't thank you enough for being a partner with us. And certainly you've taught all of our county leaders across the state the importance of preserving our forest, both our hemlock trees and also our ash trees, and the potential impact that it'll have on our public infrastructure, our recreation opportunities, and really the quality of life that we've come to know and maybe take advantage of here in New York State. So I want to thank you again for joining us, and I want to thank all of our listeners today for taking the time to listen to today's podcast. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this NYSAC podcast. Keep tuning in to hear more insightful conversations on county government throughout New York State. And feel free to reach out to our staff if there is a topic you would like to hear us discuss on the podcast.